You're listening to Vermont Edition on Vermont Public Radio. I'm Victoria St. John, joined by Taylor Dobbs, and we're here to encourage you to call 1-800-639-6391 or go to vpr.net and support VPR, your local public radio station.
And that's right. Consider a gift today of $15 a month through our sustaining membership program. That's money that you can budget for and we can budget for. And it's a great help to VPR. And we'll thank you today if you call in at 1-800-639-6391 with a VPR Sustainer travel mug with your gift of $15 a month. So please call now, 1-800-639-6391, or go to vpr.net and give securely there.
VPR and Vermont Edition always bring to you topics that are so important to the community. And with the political season being just so churned up right now, it's really important that you get facts and you get local perspectives on events that are happening. And VPR is the place to do that. Please call now, 1-800-639-6391. Your voice is heard here when you call in to Vermont Edition. It's so important that we hear from you right now.
Support something like today's show, you get a really great local take on a national issue. And that's so important. And that's something that really VPR is able to bring you every day. So please call now, 1-800-639-6391, and support VPR. Thank you so much.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. One evening earlier this week, a few dozen people gathered at the Pride Center of Vermont in Burlington. That's a support and advocacy organization for the LGBTQ community. The session was meant to clarify what, if any, rights and laws protecting LGBTQ people might change when President-elect Trump takes office. Lawyer Susan Murray encouraged everyone to stay calm.
So let's take a deep breath. Just because Donald Trump has been elected doesn't mean we can't all just take
enjoy
a deep breath,
life.
You know, yeah, and enjoy your life, okay? Okay.
Anne Murray says things won't just change overnight on January 20th.
Just because a certain person got elected president of the United States does not mean that all of our laws have gone out the door.
Okay, but what rights, protections, and federal programs could change? And how does Vermont's state law provide protections that federal law doesn't? That's our focus today. With me are the three lawyers who presented together at the Pride Center on Tuesday night: Mark Keller, who practices in Chittenden County, Zarina Suarez-O'Hagan, whose practice is in Walden, and Susan Murray, who worked on the Baker versus State of Vermont court case in the late 1990s that eventually led to civil unions. It's a pleasure to have all three of you on the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Jim.
So, Zarina, what did you hear emerging on Tuesday night as main themes of concerns here in Vermont?
Can I defer?
Sure. Mark.
Well, I think the audience was very concerned that their community, that the LGBT community, was going to be drastically affected by the election of Donald Trump. They're concerned that the rights that they have gained through the years would be rolled back, and that their health care that they just recently acquired in Vermont was going to be rolled back. And they're concerned that the protections they had in the state of Vermont would also be affected by both the Trump election and the Republicans having control over the House, the Senate, the presidency, and potentially the Supreme Court.
Susan Murray, you opened on Tuesday night by, you know, reminding people to take a deep breath and stay calm. Are these fears overblown?
I wouldn't use the word overblown, but what I wanted to do was give people a basic civics lesson and say, look, unlike in Russia when, Vladimir Putin controls everything in the government there, when we elect a United States president, that person doesn't have all important powers. We also have a federal judiciary. We have, which has made decisions supporting and protecting anti-discrimination laws and GLBTQ rights. We have federal statutes. And at the state level, the state of Vermont has all kinds of state statutes, state regulations, state policies that also protect the gay, lesbian, transgender community. So what I wanted to remind people of is that the election of a president in and of itself does not mean that there's going to be a big rollback of rights and yeah.
Are you concerned that there could be a rollback of some rights?
I actually think that in the state of Vermont, we are very lucky. We live in a very protective bubble here. We have an anti-discrimination law that was passed back in 1992 that protects gay and lesbian citizens from discrimination in housing, credit, public accommodations, employment. And that law was extended to transgender Vermonters in 1997. So those laws aren't going away. They're going to stay in place regardless of what happens on the federal level.
We're talking today about the rights that people have and what might change under a Trump administration, particularly for members of the LGBTQ community. Listeners, what do you want to know about how state laws and federal laws intersect? And do you have questions about specific areas, adoption, healthcare policy, things that have some part of federal policy, even if you're living in Vermont, that you are concerned might actually affect you? If you have a question, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your comments on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Mark Keller, one of the concerns that people have is not necessarily with President-elect Trump, who has not expressed any personal animus towards queer people in his campaigning. He, in fact, has said he supports certain things that would be helpful to people of this community. But there are some members of his administration that people are concerned about, or even Vice President-elect Pence. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what the politics are here beyond just President-elect Trump himself?
Right. President-elect Trump has given on one side clear signals. He's went farther than most Republicans talking about this community have said that he wants to protect them, etc. On the other hand, he then sometimes says the exact opposite. I was just doing some research. He was talking about the North Carolina law that
this is popularly known as the bathroom bill.
Yes. And on one day on NBC, he said he is against it. Later, the same day, he said he wasn't going to do anything to interfere. Right now, the Department of Justice is trying to find hold that law is improper. And they've gone to court to fight against it. And basically, Trump is saying that he is going to not support that continued progress with the Department of Justice, and that he will basically back away from that case. So it's hard to read what Donald Trump himself is going to do. The people surrounding them have been very clear. Governor Pence, or now Vice President that Pence, he has been adamant against gay rights. He wants to stop. He had suggested stopping funding for HIV. And use it instead for conversion therapy, which is drastically opposed by the LGBT community.
And this was many years ago when he was governor of Indiana.
Right. But he was also – Indiana had their own exception just recently in which they were trying to allow people with religious on religious grounds to refuse to serve people of this community. And Pence supported that. He did. He backed off of that when he realized it was going to cost the state a lot of money, unlike North Carolina. But he did, you know, so he was pressured into it. But had he been able to get into that situation without losing the money, he would be in support of it. Donald Trump has said on that he, again, while he's supporting the community, said one of his priorities is to protect religious freedom. And that is the code word for being allowed to engage in discrimination because you have a religious freedom.
Susan Murray.
Jane, I think Mark is right. And I think it is true that the gay, lesbian, transgender community is not in the crosshairs of this new administration at this point. They're focusing in on immigrants, new Americans, Muslims, people like that. But I think what's happening is you create an atmosphere of encouraging a different kind of attitude with the kind of things that Mark's been talking about. So you encourage people to file lawsuits seeking exemptions on the basis of religion, religious exemptions, saying I can discriminate against gay, lesbian, transgender folks because of my religion. And And that's not just in the context of purely religious entities, but maybe religious entities that are doing something secular, like renting out their halls or teaching, you know, or opening schools, things like that. So I think that, you know, that we may see an increase in bullying, because of an environment that's being created or an atmosphere that's being created.
Zarina?
I think the bullying certainly raises an issue that I've been concerned about. We've certainly seen in the country at large, if not in Vermont in particular, that vulnerable people have been subject to what one might call a hate crime of some degree. And I think that that's a legitimate concern. I mean, one of the things that I mentioned at the meeting we had the other night was that there is a state law that does give individuals a civil remedy if they do feel that there's a course of conduct of that kind of behavior, where we're not talking about one isolated instance, but if there is a person who is subjecting someone to surveillance, to following, to any kind of harassing actions like that, and it's taking over a course of time, that there is a remedy available. There's a stalking law. We're not talking about the criminal penalty, but rather the civil penalty. And I know I do actually practice in Walden, but I'm actually here representing the Vermont Network Against Sexual and Domestic Violence. And we do have the resources available to help people address that, to help them form their complaints and possibly represent them in court when they have their hearings.
So you're already thinking about that and thinking towards the future where, as Susan mentioned, there may be more issues that are not necessarily, they don't necessarily rise to a criminal level, or laws may not have changed, but people may feel because of a general atmosphere or attitude that they are more subject to harassment.
Correct. Right. I think that is a danger. And unfortunately, I think President Trump sometimes encourages that.
Well, listeners, tell us what you think and what you're doing. You know, what is the call to action that you hear? What actions are you taking in this area? Again, 1-800-639-2211. Aaron is calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Aaron. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited you're having a program on this topic. And I'm one of many members of Rainbow Umbrella of Central Vermont. It's our role in this group is to foster community and provide engagement for the LGBT community of Central Vermont. And we're all very concerned about the rising hate and rising hate crimes. And we're taking measures to be proactive about it, to protect all the rights that, you know, we've fought for over the years. And, I feel like we have to reestablish safety from the ground up on, you know, in a way to make sure that we really are safe as citizens. And so far, we've actually received some wonderful support from Montpelier's mayor right here, John Haller, to have an LGBTQ liaison for his office. And we're also, we have plans to request an LGBT liaison also for the governor's office as well. And I'm also really excited that we're working on organizing a statewide coalition to build solidarity on this issue. And I've been really relieved to see what sort of support we've been seeing so far. And I'm imagining there might be listeners and groups that are listening that also might want to be involved in this. So if you are, you can find us on our Facebook page, Rainbow Umbrella, and contact there. I think I'll make a comment about Political Action Committee.
Aaron,
and find us on the Facebook page.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling in. Interesting to hear what you're working on, and, you know, interesting in the context of this idea that whether or not there are legal actions taken, that there's a concern about an atmosphere that might change bullying, harassment, and what can be done around those areas. I also want to talk about some other areas where potentially laws could change, or where people have questions about laws, like adoption. Some people wondering about marriage, questions about what might happen to people in the military. So let's dive into a couple of them. And let's talk about this idea of adoption. Are there any changes that we could see in federal law when it comes to same-sex parents adopting, or to legal identification of parents, that people should be concerned about and might want to be checking their documents on or talking to a lawyer about? Susan Murray?
Right. Adoption is what is an area of the law that is completely covered by state law. And in Vermont, our state law is very clear that a same-sex partner or spouse of a person who is the biological or legal parent of a child can adopt that child. And that I recommend that people do those adoptions even if they're married. There's a legal presumption if you're married and you have a child during a marriage that that child is a child of the marriage and that both parents are genetically related to the child. But in the same-sex couple situation, that's not the case. Neither parent has a genetic relationship. But I always recommend that even in the context of a marriage, you go and you get an adoption in the probate court. It's not expensive. It doesn't have to be that difficult to do. And other states have adoption laws as well. And my experience, even well before the marriage laws were in place, was that if you got a legal, valid adoption in Vermont, that was going to be accepted and recognized in other states, even in places that you would not have expected.
So even if your marriage wasn't recognized in another state, the adoption usually was recognized.
Exactly.
So even though Vermont has very strong laws barring discrimination and allowing parents of many different kinds to adopt or to have a marriage and to assume that the child is that product of the marriage, you still would recommend adoption even here in Vermont,
regardless. I still do, even today. Yep.
Let's go to Jess, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Jess. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, Jane.
I'm wondering about people who are in legal same-sex marriages in Vermont. I wonder if a Trump administration could make policy changes that would effectively somehow void Vermont same-sex marriages. And I'm wondering if the Trump administration could do something to take away any related federal marital benefits for people in legal same-sex marriages.
Jess, thanks very much for your call. Mark, can I direct this to you?
Sure.
There's sort of two questions that are combined but also could be differentiated. This idea of a legal definition of marriage, could a presidential administration change that legal definition? And then things like taxes or federal benefits that are associated with a marriage. Could either of those things change?
With respect to the marriage, an existing marriage, there's basically not much the government, the state or federal government, can do to void a legal marriage. So they're married, it's legal, that's the way it is. The government does not undo marriages. The more people same-sex marriages are, the harder it's going to be to prevent future same-sex marriages. There is a Supreme Court case there's two cases that basically affected the DOMA, which is the Defense of Marriage Act. And what the Defense of Marriage Act was, it's a very short law, but it changed over 1,000 other laws in the federal government and regulations. And basically it said, when you talk about marriage, it can only be between a man and a woman. The Supreme Court reversed that and said, no, it can be basically same sex or a heterosexual, whatever. Because that was done by the Supreme Court, it had a 5-4 majority. The five members of the Supreme Court who made that decision are still on the Supreme Court. And so there's a vacancy on the Supreme Court now. President that Trump can fill that vacancy, will fill that vacancy. And even if he puts on a person who's against that decision, that person will still be in the minority as the person who was that he's replacing. So, in effect, that's not going to change. There would be more question if there's a subsequent appointment to the Supreme Court, because that could then change the balance. But the Supreme Court does not like to reverse itself because the legal precedents. That decision was based upon many other federal cases that were decided all over the country. So the wave of judicial support was on the side of that decision, not against it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, though, that everybody will remember is that, sure, the federal government couldn't invalidate a marriage that was legal in another state, but there was a long time in which the federal government didn't recognize same-sex marriages from other states. And, Mark, you mentioned those two Supreme Court rulings, you know, one of which said the federal government cannot continue to not recognize these legal marriages in other states. And then, of course, the decision that actually barred states from creating bans on same-sex marriage. And so, Susan Murray, this idea of the government being able to come in now and make a change, you know, what Mark is saying here is that the Supreme Court made these decisions. This wasn't something that was done by President Obama. It seems unlikely that President Trump could make any changes. And so the Supreme Court mix is really the key factor here.
Yes, to some extent. The case that finally decided once and for all that same-sex couples can get married was the Obergefell case from last year. And that case really touched on both. I think Jess was asking about both the status of marriage as well as the benefits that flow from marriage. And that case touched on both of those and was very strong on both of those. And so you're going to have to see a big change in the personnel at the Supreme Court level to overturn that case, number one. Number two, as Mark said, the Supreme Court doesn't lightly overturn its cases. They haven't even overturned Roe versus Wade. Think about that. That's one of the most controversial cases ever. In fact, the only case I can really think of that was a controversial issue that ever got overturned was the separate but equal case. And that took 150 years to overturn. So adding those two things together with popular opinion and the Supreme Court pays attention to that without actually saying so, as do administrations. So I don't think that marriage, I truly believe that we have a very strong firewall with regard to same-sex marriage and marriage equality issues. I am not worried about marriage. There are other things I'm more worried about, but that's not one of them.
Well, good. We're going to talk about what else you're worried about, and we're going to talk specifically about transgender rights and what mm-hmm. could change in a new administration with transgender rights and executive action. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a comment on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're talking with lawyers Mark Keller, Zarina Suarez O'Hagan, and Susan Murray. They're answering our questions about legal issues for people in the LGBTQ community amidst concerns about the new presidential administration coming into office in January. If you have a question about your rights or what might or might not change as far as federal protections go, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a comment on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We got a note from Ray who says, I think that some of the protections that have been extended to members of the community during the Obama administration, such as, I think, banning hiring and or employment discrimination for federal contractors, could very well go by the wayside. In some states, this will be quite impactful, but it may not be so much here, where I think that the state has been more willing to extend such provisions at the state level. Is Ray right that the state of Vermont will protect federal contractors even if the federal government stops some of the anti-discrimination rules on federal contractors and hiring? Mark?
The state of Vermont is not going to, I don't think it's going to use federal law. They're going to use state law. And happens in Vermont that it's stronger than federal law.
So even if you're a federal contractor, if you are employed in the state of Vermont, state law would be the higher bar that the federal contractors have to meet?
I'm not the world's greatest expert on this, but there are certain exceptions, obviously. The Air National Guard probably goes under federal law. The state probably has very little to control over what they do. So there's going to be some exceptions. But generally, if you work in the state of Vermont, you have Vermont protections and you have federal protections. You have both. Now, there could be exceptions to that.
And given that the Vermont protections are higher, you know, you're protected under Vermont law, basically.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the federal laws, though, that could affect Vermonters, because obviously Vermonters and Vermont gets a lot of federal money. So there's money involved here. And there are questions where we're talking about some federal laws. One thing that people are concerned about is health care. Donald Trump had campaigned on a promise to repeal the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare. And he's softened that stance lately. He said that there are some provisions that seem quite popular that he would likely want to keep. Is there anything in healthcare policy that you three are looking at that you think Vermonters in the LGBTQ community might want to keep an eye on or be concerned about, particularly trans members who are concerned about their health care rights?
Just recently, as actually April of 2016, a regulation came out to ensure that there's no discrimination in the Medicare, Medicaid for gender identity and sexual orientation. Based upon that, there's been 10 states plus the District of Columbia, including Vermont, was one of the 10 states, to say that we are now going to cover certain things, the transition, counseling, medication, surgery, that sort of stuff. There's still 18 states that prohibit that same type of care, and the rest of the states are quiet. Because that's based on a federal regulation, that could be changed. You're having, even without the whole Obamacare being repealed, it's still a federal regulation. Federal regulations can be changed. There's a process to go through. It's complicated. It takes some time, but they still can be changed. It's not exactly right. But so that's one case to worry about. The community here just got those rights, and now potentially a year or two, those rights could be taken away.
Susan?
So to add to that, the health insurance and health coverage, as you know, is a kind of a combination of both the of federal Affordable Care Act and Vermont law, Vermont Health Connect. And Vermont's insurance commissioner has issued a regulation, a bulletin, describing the scope of coverage that's required, and is issued a rule saying that you can't discriminate. So in the state of Vermont, we've got a state-level anti-discrimination provision as it relates to transgender health care issues like hormone replacement, surgery, et cetera. So if someone has coverage through the state law, then they're in good shape. To just get back to the Affordable Care Act, the federal act, I mean, Donald Trump has talked about repealing it, but now everybody's saying, hey, we can't really repeal everything because they would put 30 million people off the insurance, take away insurance from 30 million people. They don't want to do that. They don't want to take away insurance for people with pre-existing conditions. They don't want to take away insurance for kids who are under the age of 26 who are still being covered by their parents. Those are popular provisions in the federal act. And so they may not repeal the Affordable Care Act altogether. One of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act is a non-discrimination provision. So if they're not going to repeal the whole thing, then it's going to be very interesting to see how they and whether they cherry pick things to repeal and whether one of the things they cherry pick to repeal is the anti-discrimination provision. In other words, they just take out the anti-discrimination provision and say, therefore, you can discriminate. I don't know that that's going to happen. That's going to be an interesting battle.
Could they, though, say, we want to make sure that no federal dollars are going to surgery for people who are transitioning? Could they say that?
So, of course, they could. But the way the federal anti-discrimination provision is written, it doesn't actually define who doesn't get discriminated against. That's written up in a separate regulation. What it says is anybody who is protected by other federal laws, like Title IX, which is education protections against discrimination, Title VII, which is employment discrimination, that if you're protected under those categories, you're also protected here under the Affordable Care Act. And federal case law has interpreted Title IX and Title VII, those other laws, to protect transgender rights and gender identity as a protected category. So it's not as easy to undo as you might think.
Mark and Zarina, I know you both want to weigh in. Here's Zarina.
So it's one of the interesting ways that in some ways, if you're in prison, you may be in a slightly better position, not a lot, because when you're in prison, you're protected by the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. And I've been doing some research for the network recently on the question about if you have a trans person in prison, what kinds of medical care is available to them. And there actually have been states who have enacted legislation that said that we, the state, will not allow any prisoner to have any hormone therapy, for example. And those have been attacked in federal court, and they have been struck down, that because you're entitled under the Eighth Amendment to adequate medical care, a legislature can't tell a doctor what adequate medical care is, and that kind of interference is not allowed.
Mark?
The members of the Congress are going to try to do what they can to go around this. Just as an example, in 2014, Obama changed the federal non-discrimination in employment to add sexual orientation and gender identity. There is immediate push in Congress to have that overturned. And, matter of fact, just recently, a senator said that by having that in there is requiring people to sin. And so they are trying to overturn that, and that's that. And they're doing it by having that First Amendment enforcement law that I talked to before, which they would put a defense. If I don't have to engage in this, I don't have to deal with this person because it's against my religion. So they're trying to make that affirmative defense to the allegation that you're discriminating.
What I'm hearing from all three of you is that laws, and specifically laws that came into place because of court action, may be quite difficult to overturn, or at least very difficult to overturn very quickly. However, other things like executive action or directives from the president may be things that could be overturned quickly. And again, in some cases, this may not be Vermont specific. So, you know, the Vermont Agency of Education has directed schools to treat children by the gender they identify with, and that includes which bathrooms they are able to use. The federal government, President Obama, has also issued guidelines to schools, but those are not law. So something like that could be changed quite quickly in a new administration. Susan Murray, you said there were things that you were worried about. Is it that kind of action that you're worried about?
I'm worried about that for folks in other states. I'm not worried about that for folks in Vermont. I think state law is not going to change. State policy is not going to change. But if you're in Mississippi, that's a problem.
So what are you worried about?
So I'm worried mostly about the things that Mark was talking about, the religious exemption issues. You know, my religion says that I don't have to rent to you, or I don't have to hire you, or I don't have to let you eat at my restaurant. That's the kind of stuff I'm worried about.
And you think that could extend to Vermont despite our provisions?
I don't think it will be successful because I think we have very strong anti-discrimination laws. But I think that the environment has been created to encourage those kinds of cases.
I want to correct one thing and then go back and add where it could affect. We mentioned before federal law, state law. Clearly, if you're working for a federal agency, the federal law is going to control, not the state law.
So as a federal contractor, the hiring laws that are at play here are the federal laws.
And that's they are doing a combination state and federal project. But if you're working for the federal court system, you're going to go by the federal law is going to control. You're working for some other federal agency, the federal law is going to control. And if they then put in, as a part of the federal government, that you are allowed to use this defense, then that could cause a problem. So you could have individual people saying, I am not going to grant this particular license. I'm not going to process your request for a passport because of my religious freedom.
So we will continue this conversation. Obviously, no new administration has even been put in place yet. So this is an ongoing conversation. I'm glad to hear some of the legal clarifications that you three could give us today, and we will continue to look at this. We've been talking with Mark Keller, Zarina Suarez-O'Hagan, and Susan Murray. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, if you're in the midst of a mental health crisis, there's a quick tool you may not be aware of, a crisis text line that Vermont has partnered up with to provide easy access to help. We'll talk about it next on Vermont Edition.
And this is Taylor Dobbs. I'm here with Victoria St. John. This is the VPR membership drive. And we're asking you to please consider a gift to VPR today to support the great journalism and conversation you hear on air every day and see online. Consider a gift right now of $18 a month, and that'll get you a New York Times digital subscription. That's right, Vic?
Yes, it will. It will include everything that you love about the New York Times. Call now. Make a pledge of $18 a month. Call 1-800-639-6391 or go to vpr.net. Take a look at the other thank you gifts. But the important reason to call is because these conversations are critical in your life. You value them. Please make a pledge and support Vermont Edition and all the other programs you hear on VPR. At our core, VPR is all about inclusion, and our goal is to create connections between members of our community and engage listeners from across all political spectrums and in some civil discourse. And that's what's happening today.
That's right. You know, Vermont Edition is a great example of that mission, coming out. We have the LGBT community asking great questions about what this new presidential administration will mean in Vermont for rights and protections. And we're about to hear this segment on mental health issues. These are vital conversations that really need to be had across the state. And VPR, with your support, is able to broadcast across the state, have great online news that people can follow, and really reach listeners or readers wherever they are to help that conversation move forward and to invite all of you into the conversation so you can ask experts these questions. And please call right now. Give your support, 1-800-639-6391, or you can give securely at vpr.net.
You're so right, Taylor. And the good part of that also is your voice can be heard. You can ask questions by calling into Vermont Edition. Your voice, your questions, all are valuable to VPR. VPR is here to connect you with not only the community, but the nation and the world. Vermont Edition is here for you every day thanks to listener support. Over 93% of VPR's funding comes from the local community. So we are speaking to you right now. You're listening to Vermont Edition on VPR, and we're counting on you to make a pledge, 1-800-639-6391 or vpr.net.
Another great example of inviting you into the conversation to be part of these stories and these conversations that everyone's having across the state is this new podcast, Brave Little State, that some of our colleagues are putting together. They put the question to you. They say, what would you like VPR to look into, to investigate? And then our question asker comes along and helps report the story. And it's a really great example of figuring out what the big questions are in Vermonters' minds and then trying to find an answer and sharing that with the rest of the state. And that's such a vital service that we need now more than ever. So please support VPR. Call 1-800-639-6391.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. One of the challenges for people experiencing acute feelings of sadness, anxiety, or a desire to harm themselves is getting help right when they need it. To that end, the state of Vermont has partnered up with a national crisis line to offer Vermonters the ability to send a text message when they need someone to talk to. Here to tell us a little bit more about the program is Melissa Bailey, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Mental Health. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, Jane. It's nice to be here.
So to access the text service, you text 741-741 and you put VT into your initial text. And then where is your text going?
That's correct. So it is going to the volunteers that exist across the nation that have been trained in responding to people sending these texts expressing situations that they're in, pain that they're feeling, and whatnot. So it would go to any one of the volunteers. There's, I believe, 35,000 volunteers that have been trained, and they respond within a five-minute period, and they help people get from a place of stress or what they call hot to a place of cool by helping people think through what are concrete steps they can take to mitigate the situation that they're in.
And all of that is done via text?
All of that is done via text.
So if someone expresses a desire, say, to hurt themselves or others or appears to be in immediate danger, what does the crisis line volunteer do?
So the crisis line volunteer first begins by engaging the person and trying to find out exactly where they're located. And concurrent to that, they also connect with a supervisor. So there are, besides the volunteer that are available, there are paid crisis clinical people that are available to offer supervision. So while the crisis counselor is continuing to engage with the person, they would connect with their supervisor, and that person would try to either locate exactly where the person is via the text and getting that information from that person, or they will call the 911 in our state, and we've already had some really great conversations with the state police and the others, other sheriff departments around getting the 911, them being aware of this service and how they triangulate the cell signal in order to find where that person is if that person's unwilling to disclose. But what we hear from the crisis text line, their experience nationally, that only happens in about 1% of the text exchanges, and most often the people are willing to describe where they are or give the exact location.
Well, and so they can use your cell phone number to ping your location in an emergency situation like that, but this service is free, and my understanding is there's no obvious number that's going to show up on your bill if you're worried about maintaining your privacy, or you know, if you're on a shared family plan, it's not going to come up saying you texted the crisis line.
That's correct. That's correct. It does not show up on a bill, and there are no charges for the main carriers. I just want to stress that Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile. There are some other, you know, smaller companies that that may not be the case, but for those main providers, that is not the case.
How does this partnership work? How did the state, or why, I guess, did the state have to get involved in this?
Well, so our medical director, Dr. Batra, became aware of this service, and we began to explore it, found out that it was a free service, that it was already actually available for Vermonters. Our role is only in promoting it and using the tagline VT to help us see the de-identified data that will come through, that will give us some sense of what people are texting about, what are the concerns, what areas people are texting from, which will give us an opportunity to do a little bit better identifying of what programmatic or other changes that we may want to make through our system to support individuals. So our role is solely to promote this service. Like I said, it was already available for Vermonters. Now what we're trying to do is really get the word out about it.
So when you say you get de-identified information, do you actually get the exchanges, or do you just get some kind of statistics on what people are talking about?
Statistics about what people are talking about. There's no information. We will never see text exchanges between individuals. What we will see is people have called or text, I'm sorry, about this particular topic, you know, this percentage of time from this part of the state or whatever it may be. You can actually go on their website now with the crisis text line trends and get a sense of what people are texting about in Vermont today. And then we'll have more information as the VT tagline is being used.
So there are already 800 lines you can call, or, you know, other kinds of hotlines to call and have a conversation with someone. Why is having a text option important?
Well, what we're finding is more and more people are communicating via text. Our initial thoughts was this was going to be a good resource for college age and adolescent age individuals. And what we're hearing from some other states is they are finding that 45 to 55-year-old males are using it more often, that there's different cadres of people that are really interested in communicating via text. It feels like it's a quick non-threatening way to communicate about something that you're struggling with.
So again, the text number is 741-741, and you're asking people to type in VT so that it can be identified as a Vermont call for that data. And the department says you should get a response within 5 minutes, right?
Correct. That's correct.
Melissa Bailey is Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Mental Health. Thanks very much for talking to us about the crisis text line.
Thanks, Jane. I really appreciate it.
And thanks to you for listening to the program today. Listen tomorrow when Senator Patrick Leahy will be our guest. He was easily reelected last month to his 8th U.S. Senate term, but the Senate he's returning to has changed, and so has his role in it. Leahy will be live all hour tomorrow to talk about the new Congress, the new president, and to take your questions. Send them in advance to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen live tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Liam Elder Connors directed the program, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Vermont Edition on listener-supported Vermont Public Radio. I'm Victoria St. John, joined by Taylor Dobbs, and we are here to remind you that we are listener-supported. We're counting on your call right now at 1-800-639-6391. Because you're listening and because VPR airs 78 local newscasts per week and Vermont Edition produces over 260 hours of local public affairs programming per year, and it's important to you, please make that call now.
And one of the great parts about VPR is that we give it all away for free. There's no paywall. You don't have to do anything. We just broadcast it and people can listen or people can go online and find our stuff. That's really important to us. So please help support that mission. Call 1-800-639-6391. Another really cool thing we've been doing recently is engaging a lot on Reddit. And we had a series of AMA sessions, which stands for Ask Me Anything, with the candidates for governor during the primary race. And we got a lot of great questions directly from the audience to the candidates. And really, it was cool. We could sort of step out of the way and VPR put the two together, but everybody just had a conversation. And it was a really neat way to get the issues out there and to get questions asked directly to the candidates. And that was all set up by VPR, and we really need your support to keep doing cool stuff like that. So call now, 1-800-639-6391, or head on over to vpr.net.
It's critical we hear from you right now. VPR is here as a resource to bring the voices from the community that are diverse and have different opinions, and we're not afraid to air them. So if this is important to you, call now. Make a pledge. Keep VPR strong and Vermont Edition charging ahead. 1-800-639-6391 or VPR.net. 93% of VPR's funding comes from you. Yeah, I'm really talking to you. You're going to hear local underwriters as well, but that's what we hear. That's what funds VPR, are the people who are listening and we're talking to you. Call now, 1-800-639-6391.
We really depend on you to keep bringing these great Vermont editions or our local newscasts every day with the latest information on what's going on around the state. You know, there's so much going on in Vermont, and it can be really hard to keep tabs on everything, especially if it's in a different region. So please call now and help us do that, 1-800-639-6391.